Good morning. My name is Heidi Peterson. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It's an honor to have the society meetings here this year in Minnesota. I hope that all of you have had the opportunity to learn a little bit about Minnesota's agriculture over the last couple days. And for those of you who have not learned about Minnesota Ag yet, feel free to stop by vendor booth 1331. We have a bunch of Minnesota agriculture statistics, so you'll get your fill on Minnesota Ag trivia there. Today I'd like to share a little bit about some of the results of the data that we've collected from our long-term research and demonstration sites across the state. For those of you who flew in to Minnesota for the conference, this is probably what you saw out of the window as you were making your descent into Minneapolis. So we are the land of 10,000 lakes. With that, we have about 4,000 water quality impairments, 2,400 of those requiring TMDLs, and approximately 40% of those due to excess nutrients and sediment. Last year, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency put together their pathway to achieving healthy water quality for the state. And that's the Minnesota Nutrient Reduction Strategy. These two figures are taken out of that document. So you can see here on the left that approximately 70% of the nitrogen reaching our surface waters is due to cropland, whereas the phosphorus is a little bit more diverse, coming from about 37% coming from cropland. So a question that we often get at the Department of Ag is how effective are our conservation or alternative crop management practices at reducing nutrient and sediment impairments? Before we were getting this question asked by our producers, but now we're seeing it often from our researchers, our watershed managers, those who are involved in developing scenarios to reaching our water quality goals. In order to answer these questions, the Department of Ag is invested in setting up long-term agricultural demonstration sites. So in other words, we're conducting field-scale monitoring in real-world conditions. To answer some of the practical questions, including how much are we losing from our fields, are our best management practices working, and what reduction goals are practical to achieve, and how long will it take? Often the research that we invest in is only a couple years long. So once a practice gets put out on the landscape, we're not able to quantify that lag time. How long does it take in order to actually see a change in the water quality? So our long-term demonstration sites, keeping the practices on the landscape and monitoring for at least 10 years is what our goal is. The two main demonstration sites that we have within the Department of Agriculture are our Discovery Farm sites, which some of you are probably familiar with, and also our Root River Field to Stream Partnership. Between these two projects, we have 15 demonstration sites across the state with 26 automated monitoring stations. Today, what I'm going to do is focus on one site in particular there, though, and that's located in southeast Minnesota. That's the Root River Field to Stream Partnership. The purpose of the Root River Field to Stream Partnership is to conduct intensive surface and groundwater monitoring at multiple scales. So not only at the watershed scale, but also we have sites set up at the edge of field. And this is in order to assess the amount and the sources of the nutrients. We're looking at sediment, phosphorus, and nitrogen, and to determine the effectiveness of targeted conservation practices. So the idea is we started this in 2009. We want it to last at least 10 years. So we started out, this last 5 years was for baseline monitoring. We just finished up doing field walkovers, so that's meeting with the farmers, talking with them where they have some of the where are some of the critical source areas where we could be putting practices in. And now over the next 5 years, we're going to actually be moving forward toward implementing those best management practices. The Root River watershed, again located in southeast Minnesota, it's predominantly agricultural. Mostly corn and soybean. It's 1 million acres in size, and the great thing about it for a project is that it covers 3 diverse geologic features. So we have glacial till in the headwater, we have karst topography as well, and then bluffland. And so we were able to select 3 sub-watersheds to capture each of these geologic settings. Looking a little closer at these sub-watersheds that we chose within each of the regions, we have our headwaters, which is what your traditional Minnesota ag looks like. So we have a flatter landscape, poorly drained soils, and those are tiled. About larger farm systems as well, and again, corn, soybean. Within Crystal Creek, that's where we have our karst topography. So carbonate bedrock, we have sinkholes present, some large enough to actually literally lose tractors in them. We have seen that happen. And then also Bridge Creek, which is the location where the river empties into the Mississippi River. And so the agricultural practices that we see within Crystal Creek and Bridge Creek are very similar. Not only do we have corn and soybean, but we also do see alfalfa as well. The way that the hydrology works within the watersheds, the headwaters in Crystal Creek are very similar. So that the tile drainage that we're seeing in the headwaters actually is acting similar to what the karst system is resulting in. Whereas Bridge Creek is a little bit flashier because of the steep slopes of the bluffland. Within each of the sub-watersheds, we are monitoring in-stream. So we are able to look at what the nutrient loads are 365 days a year. And that's also looking at what the flow is. So the flow is, the soil temperature, collecting precipitation as well. These are our edge of field monitoring stations. We have 1 set up in the headwaters, 2 set up in Crystal Creek, and 1 set up in Bridge Creek. The nice thing about our systems is they are top of the line in terms of what we're collecting and the monitoring equipment. So if there is a data anomaly as we're looking at the data, we have a way to look at some backup data as well. We have photos of the site, so we have like a game cam set up, 2 of them, 1 looking out at the field to be able to identify when is the producer applying nutrients, tilling the land. We also have a camera that's set up looking at the equipment so we can see if there was maybe ice that was causing a dam. This is a close-up of what our sampling equipment looks like. We have equal flow increment sampling taking place. We can collect about 96 subsamples within each of our composite samples. And so to date, from 2010 until today, we have collected over 2,000 samples, which is equivalent to about 200,000 grab samples. And what's great is because we are working with the producers, we want everything to be transparent. So we have set up a system so that the producers can actually go online and get real-time conditions. And this is very helpful to graduate students in the area as well. If they don't have the automated samplers taking place for their data collection, they can log in to our system, see when flow is happening, and get out there. So just a snapshot of our results. We've averaged, looking at the Root River Field-to-Stream Partnership Project, as well as Discovery Farms, we have about 20 field runoff events annually. And what's interesting is that it's only about 1 to 2 events that are producing over half of the annual runoff volume. This is one of our sites here. We had 5 centimeters of rainfall in 20 minutes. We had the commissioner coming into the site the next day. We thought, what is he going to think about this? But actually, there was not any sign. There was such a nicely managed grass waterway. There was not any sign that this huge stormfall event took place the day before. F- 4 months account for 90% of our annual losses, so it's March, April, May, and June. And you can see that I uploaded my presentation early because you guys have all been here to witness, and I haven't checked the data yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to drop off that November from no observed runoff in the months of November and December. So again, this is data since 2010. We hadn't had any runoff events in November prior to what I'm thinking is this year. But you can see here, because of the 90% of the losses in March, April, May, and June, we're going to focus the next couple slides on just those 4 months. So the blue is showing March and April, so often that's frozen soil conditions. And then the tan is May and June. And I'm going to click over here. So this expands those four data a little bit more. So 31% of the runoff volume is accounted for 89% of the annual sediment loss, and that's in May and June. And so that's also when we're seeing a lot of our phosphorus leaving the landscape as well. 62% of the runoff volume is carrying 69% of the dissolved orthophosphate. And again, that's primarily in the frozen soil conditions. So what does this mean for us? Well, we have only 12% of our soil is leaving our landscape during frozen soil conditions, but yet most of our plant available nutrients, so that dissolved orthophosphorus and some of our highest concentrations of nitrate N, are leaving during those frozen soil conditions. So we need to rethink our best management practices if that's what we're trying to address. We need to think about covering our land surface. It's something that we've been talking about for ages. Keep the surface covered. In Minnesota, during those 4 months, that's when we have bare soil. So we have to, increase the diversity of our landscape in terms of increasing cover crops or perennial vegetation, and also thinking about those 4 R's for fertilizer application. So our lessons learned. I don't want to say conclusions because we will be continuing to monitor for several more years. But sediment and nutrient losses are highly variable. And that's the benefit of having the long-term demonstration sites. We're able to capture 365 days a year the nutrient runoff. So we don't miss any of those pulses of nutrients coming off of our fields. The timing of precipitation events is a major driver of surface runoff. And so can we size our BMPs to capture those huge stormfall events? Probably not. But if we could keep our surface covered, that's going to help with a lot of it. Long-term demonstration validates the assumptions and captures landscape changes. It makes the producers a lot more confident about the models that our researchers are developing. And maintaining existing best management practices for optimal efficiency. So the elephant in the room is that we may have best management practices already out there, but we're not maintaining them. So it's so important that our producers are maintaining them. And what I want to show you here real quick is a little case study of that, and actually captures those 4 lessons that we've learned so far. So this is looking at a grass waterway. If you were to look at an air photo, you think, okay, great. This producer has a grass waterway, so we're going to have low runoff. Well, what happened is that they went out there with a chisel plow and made this gully here. And so that goes down to about 8 inches. Shortly after, one of our highest rainfall events took place, opened up that little rill there into about 10 foot wide gully there, and that changed the annual load from runoff sediment contribution from about 2 pounds per acre to about 8,000 pounds per acre. And so, if we weren't capturing that every day, we would have missed that event. So, moving forward, we want to continue doing producer meetings to prioritize best management practice implementation, and then also continue monitoring during this time of implementation in order to document the water quality benefits from the implementation of the best management practices. In fact, on that field with the gully, we have just worked with a producer to actually do a designed grass waterway to fix that problem. So with that, thank you very much for attending the presentation today. If there are more questions that you have that weren't addressed, there is a presentation that goes into a lot more detail on this partnership, the River Field to Stream Partnership, in session 348 today at 2:45 by Margaret Wagner. Thank you. Well, so that was not intentional.
You had said that they had dug out.
It was just when they were out there doing work on their field, that was an accidental gully.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was not intentional. Sorry if that was unclear. So that was not intentional. And so that just goes to show, though, that there are some that unintentional activities often lead to some of our largest nutrient and sediment production reasons.
We actually have a